My name is Donald Madden. I'm an alcoholic. And they asked for people out of town to identify themselves. And I thought, since I just identified myself, that the three who didn't should. Come on. Now that's their growth, and now I'll tell you about mine. And I was in my first year on this program, and I was sitting one night in a meeting at Roxbury and in Beverly Hills, and the price of the big book had just gone up, and I said to the person next to me, "My God, if I'd gotten here when I should, I could have saved some money." And there was somebody sitting in the row in front of me who heard it and looked around to see who'd said it and said to his friend, "If he'd gotten here when he should, he would have written it." And I moved on into my second year, and I was coming back from a participation meeting in Long Beach in my station wagon with about eight alcoholics, and I quietly said to the man next to me in the front seat, I said, it just dawned on me at that participation meeting, and I said to him, I said, "God, I didn't get here a moment too soon." And a voice from the back of the wagon in the dark said, "If you ask me, he got here 5 minutes too late." And and it's almost how I got here. I'm not a product that surrendered easily to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I never went to jail. I never did any of those things. But I was in the same I was in the same sanitarium 24 times. And the first time I was there for 2 days. And I came into Alcoholics Anonymous sober because I was held over for 2 months. And I was to find out what I had always fantasized while I was there. There was a wing in that hospital that alarm bells used to go off in, and guards used to go rushing across the grounds with clubs, and I always wondered what was inside it, and I found out what was inside it. It was people like me, strapped down and standing in front of the bulletproof windows getting your cigarette lit. You find people you identify with in Alcoholics Anonymous, and in my first year I was sitting in a participation meeting, and a woman across the room who had exactly a year more than me was talking about gratitude. And what she said was that she always carried a pack of matches with her, so that whenever gratitude eluded her, she'd reach into her pocketbook and pull out the pack of matches, and I knew exactly where she came from. I knew exactly the route she had come. You know, where you don't even have that privilege anymore. I mean, they have taken it all away, including your razor, your belt, and your matches. Your ability to do anything is gone. I didn't realize before I got here just how far my ability to think had gone. I mean, I sat at the very end of it in that psychiatrist's office, and he was telling me every day that I had to leave. And I had finally, those last dozen times, realized that I had found a home. I mean, it no longer was terrifying for me to go in that sanitarium. It was terrifying to come out. I no longer was frightened to go in. I was frightened to come out. And what he said to me was, he said, I finally screwed up the courage to ask him one morning why he wanted me to leave. And he said, "Because I very honestly feel that if you don't get out of here immediately, you may be one of those who's never able to face the world again and has to face a wall for the rest of your life." And sitting there quietly, what my head said was, "That's awfully dramatic." But the point was, I had not faced the world for a long time. And I did leave there, and I was evicted. And I came into alcoholic. I mean, that's the final, you know, that's the final rejection. When they evicted you from a nut house where you're spending $150 a day. And I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm not one of the ones who came in here with the great realization that he was an alcoholic and was so thrilled to find it out. I had known I was an alcoholic for a long time. I just didn't know what being an alcoholic had to do with not drinking and not using anything. But I came in when it was right for me, because I came in when I no longer was an alcoholic, and who I was someone who was totally powerless over alcohol and totally powerless over any other kind of chemicals. And I was destroyed enough, fortunately for me. I mean, it was a sensational way to come into this program, because my head couldn't think it out and my head couldn't analyze it. And I was absolutely traumatized by everything, every newspaper I read, every magazine I read. And fortunately, it was still almost 11 years ago. And fortunately, it was still the old timers who told you the things that worked in Alcoholics Anonymous. And they told me that I didn't have to get into it, and I didn't have to figure it out. They told me I didn't have to read newspapers, and I didn't have to read magazines. They told me if I didn't take the first drink, everything would be all right. I didn't understand what that meant until 3 years later, because being an alcoholic, when they said if I didn't take the first drink, everything would be all right, I thought they meant be all right now. And it wasn't all right now, and it took a long time to get there. But it took me about 3 years to understand that that was true, because that had happened to me. It took me a long time on this program, because I came in here very destroyed. I came in here with a minor packet of money, because a company I had built had settled money on me. I mean, they settled money to get rid of me, is what they had done. And it went fast. And I came in here with a watch on, and 3 years later I had nothing, because I was not able to work. And everything I tried to put together sober wouldn't go. Nothing would go. Nobody would go. All I had going for me was Alcoholics Anonymous. And it had happened to me exactly as it should happen to me. I came in here a compulsive pig. I had always been that about everything I had ever gotten in touch with. A year before I came to this program, I had gained 50 pounds on Grape Nuts Flakes. I ate Grape Nuts Flakes exactly as I drank. I would leave the dinner table and go into the kitchen and have a bowl of Grape Nuts Flakes on the sly. I mean, I ate them all the time. And I then had to go to Europe on an assignment. And this was in and out of the sanitarium. They would give me a large vial of, because booze was no longer working, and I had a psychiatrist busy trying to save my life. And while I was busy destroying it, and he thought I needed rest, and nothing worked anymore. And so we now found a 250 milligram sleeping pill, which I found worked. And I had my first at 5 in the morning. And I just replaced the gin. It's all I did. And I had my last 5 at midnight. And they'd give me another vial of those, and they sent me to Europe. And I was to go to Europe on assignment. And I had the sleeping pills, but I decided that if I was going to be in Europe and I was going to be with somebody in motion pictures, and I decided I should look well. So I went on a diet to lose the 50 pounds I had gained on Grape Nuts Flakes. And the diet consisted of gin, Alka-Seltzer, and black coffee. And I lost the weight very fast, and the doctor said, "My God, it's amazing you didn't have a heart attack." But I lost the weight. It's how I lived. I mean, I had no level of living. I had no level of loving. I had no level of being. I had no level that I had no control. I had never had any control. And it took me a long time to get any kind of control sober. I mean, all my valves were rusty. Who had to have control? I mean, your control came out of a bottle of gin. At the end of it, my control came out of a pocket full of sleeping pills that I could palm one more sleeping pill. And that wasn't my number. That's not what worked for me. Sleeping pills allowed me to function in the world I lived in, quietly and calmly. They allowed me to stay down enough to exist and function and make enough money to prove that I deserved the place I was standing in the world you lived in. But it didn't do it for me. Gin was the thing that hit me and put it in place fast and put me where I should be now. And I remember I came off a 2-month assignment in Europe, and that station wagon, one went down to a lower level and one dropped me off at the house, and I walked in there and I had a third of a bottle of gin down me so fast, I can't tell you. And I was back in that bed with 3 bottles of gin and back in that sanitarium in 4 days. And that's the great, wonderful world of drinking that I came from. I mean, I hear people who come in here swinging through the treetops. And I just look at them in amazement. I mean, I hadn't been out there in a long time. I mean, meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous were terrifying to me. I hadn't been in a room with more than two people in it for 2 years. And that was me and my psychiatrist. And I never said anything to him. I mean, he would ask me a question at the beginning of the 50 minutes, and we'd sit in silence for 50 minutes. And at the end of it, it was not because I wouldn't tell him. It's because I didn't know. I mean, when someone asks you a very intellectual question like, how are you? At that point, at the end of it, it took me 50 minutes to figure out what it was. And by that time, he was gone. And I was back in the lockup. I would sit in his office, and in a rare burst of honesty, he'd say, how are you? And I would say, I'd half a pint of gin in my pocket. I'd just been released 2 days before. And with a little bit of terror in his eyes, he'd say, don't you think with your case history that's a little dangerous? And I would say, and believing it, I would say, no, I can handle this. It's only a half a pint of gin. And I would go into one half pint, to two half pints, to three half pints, to four half pints, and you have to get rid of those. So you graduate to a pint, to 2 pints, to 3 pints, to 4 pints, you graduate to the quart. And by then you're terrified, so you're back on the sleeping pills, and by then you've carted you back to the sanitarium anyway. I mean, I had worked all of my life to have what I had, and I didn't think it was enough, and it wasn't enough for me. And I had gone to work when I was 16, and I'd been rolled off a gold platter. I didn't know anything about the world. I was terrified of everybody. But I wanted it all, and I wanted it all right now. And I came from one of those Irish families who had always gone after it and always gotten it all, and they'd always all wanted it more. And that's what I knew. Those were my values. And I went to work when I was 16, and by the time I came into this program, I was living in an 18-room house with three servants and two cars and second mortgages and stocks, and I was lying in bed with the door shut because I was terrified to meet my own servants in the hallway. And I was foraging for food. I would wait till that house finally was silent. And I would get up, and I would, with no lights on, and I'd go down to that big kitchen, and I'd forage for food without any lights on to get something to eat and take it back out to my room and lock the door again. And that's how wonderful it was for me. It was just wonderful. You have to work hard to pay enough to pay the psychiatrist and pay the sanitarium, and, you know, God. I never considered myself an expensive drunk because I wasn't out there with all the rest of you. And when you drink gin in bed, that's not expensive. And you don't have to buy any for anybody else. You have to hide it under your mattress, and hopefully you haven't hidden it from yourself by 3 o'clock in the morning when you're hands and knees shaking yourself to death trying to find what's left in the bottom of one of those bottles. And I don't miss it at all. I don't miss any of it at all. The insanity was that I didn't come into this program with great joy. What my head said to me when I got here was, oh my God, it's all over. It's all over, and it will never be again, and I'll never have it again, and I'll never have anything again, and I'll never have anybody again. Well, I weighed 148 pounds. I wasn't able to think. Meetings were terrifying to me. But what had happened to me as I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, this was the only thing left for me to be compulsive about. This was all I had. And every single character defect that destroyed me before I got here made this program work for me. Because finally what I wanted was to stay sober. And there wasn't a son of a bitch in the world that could make me drink. Even in Alcoholics Anonymous. I, like a few other alcoholics, had problems with people. Fortunately, I was born again in Los Angeles, California, where there are 1,000 meetings a week. I got to meet a lot of people. I got to meet a lot of people because I moved constantly. I kept running. I didn't know that's what it was. I kept running in Alcoholics Anonymous. I changed meetings all the time. I still don't identify when someone says, what's your home group? My home group is Alcoholics Anonymous. When I found out about all the meetings, that's where I was, plastered against the wall, smiling, wherever there was a meeting. And I was suicidal, and I used to run in front of the fear because they told me not to get into the fear. They told me not to get into anything. They told me to move on and move ahead, and God, I did. Saturdays and Sundays were total suicide time for me. I became a suicidal almost immediately. I mean, what are you going to do with somebody who has no place left to run? I mean, he's got to become a suicidal. And I fought that for almost a year and a half. And suddenly, if you go to enough meetings in Alcoholics Anonymous, you hear all the answers anyway. And the answer was there. And that answer is that if you've turned your will and your life over to the care of God, it's no longer your life to take. So you're stuck with it and stuck with what's left of it. But weekends were suicidal for me. And what I used to do, because I was used to... the meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous had done something to me. They had never solved anything, but they always... It always took the weight off. It always took the extra 50 pounds off. It always took enough of the insanity off so I never did commit suicide. I saved all of the terrifying things to think about, like what toothpaste to buy. For a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was going through a tremendous legal battle with that company that was settling on me, and I didn't know what to do about it, and I had never told anyone anything, and I didn't tell anybody in here anything. I didn't tell anybody in here that I was a bundle of walking rashes and that I had staphylococcus boils, and I had muscle spasms for almost 2 years, and you had to catch me in a muscle spasm to know I had one. And you had to look fast, I'll tell you. And there was a beautiful woman in this program which today got 18 years. And she was sitting across the table at a noon meeting from me one day. She caught me going into muscle spasm. And she did something wonderful. She didn't over-explain it, and she didn't over-extend herself, and she didn't put her hand out, and she didn't try to make it all right for me. She had beautiful blue eyes and just looked across the table, and she winked. And I knew she'd been there. And that's all that counted for me. And that's all that counted for me a lot in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because what the meetings did for me was they made me realize that I hadn't been out there alone, that it wasn't just me. Even today, whenever I get into wherever I'm at, or whatever is or isn't happening in my life, it makes it all right for me because I'm not just there alone. There are other people who think that way, who feel that way, who have been there, who are there, or even if they don't know it, are going to be there. Everything I didn't identify with when I got here, everything that was said to me that my head would say, not me, the answer has been, yes, you. It has all happened for me. Everything has happened to me. I have not been one of the ones who's had to do everything sober that he did as a drunk. I have had to do everything sober I never did as a drunk. I was so terrified for so long and hiding for so long, I didn't get into a lot of things. In addition to which, I had lived a life that was so totally judgmental of everybody else who stepped 1 inch off the square, but it didn't allow me to step off the square very much until they turned me loose, sober, and crazy in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was like a child on a landscape, and it was all there in the whole horizon, and I didn't know who I was in it, what I was in it, where I was going in it, and I just kept running. And I got into everything. And thank God for people like Mark Kennedy, who had seen the total fear in me, and had just looked me in the eye and said, you gotta do whatever it is you're frightened to do to know what you don't have to do anymore. And I didn't understand it then until I had to do it all to find out what I didn't have to do anymore. And he ended it by saying to me that day, or maybe you'll like it. And I didn't understand that until I found out I liked it. I'm glad I didn't come in the part of Alcoholics Anonymous that put you in a closet and told you exactly how to live and exactly what to do and exactly how to think and exactly how to shave your face. Because I've had to find all those things out for myself like a tiny child. I've had to find out with a lot of pain and a lot of joy exactly what the world's all about and exactly where I fit in and exactly who I am and exactly what I know. And I get a lot of advice I have for the last year and a half in Alcoholics Anonymous because of the world I live in today, and I And I thank them sincerely because I know they mean it sincerely. But there is one thing, I do know who I am today. And I know what my boundaries are today. And I know what I can do and what I can't do. And I know a lot of the solutions to areas I've been in are wonderful for them, but they're not for me because it's not who I am. And I'm just not comfortable there. And I don't have to be there anymore. I have participated heavily in alcohol. I mean, I got to know a lot of people because I ran so much in here. I ran from meeting to meeting to meeting to meeting to meeting to meeting. Maybe to escape me, maybe to escape you, maybe to escape all the feelings, and it didn't make any difference. I stopped criticizing my sobriety a long time ago because I was sober. And whatever it took to get me there or whatever I did to stay sober, it doesn't make any difference because it's sobriety that counts, and sobriety is what everything comes from. And sobriety has given me my learning and has given me time enough to put in place what I was and what I wasn't. It's sobriety that's given me all that I have today. It's the longevity of sobriety that finally gets it going. And they say that the newcomers are the most important people in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's not true for me today. The most important people in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous are the people with more sobriety than me. I need them to be in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I need to walk into a room and see the people who have 13 years and 15 years and take 16-year cakes. I need 18-year-old people and 20-year-old people and 22-year-old people because they're my hope. They're my validation. When I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, they said to play with the winners, and the winners at the beginning had 30 days. I mean, Jesus. I mean, when you're just in the door and someone's got 30 days... And then I got 30 days and they had 90 days. I mean, I listened. I wanted to know how someone got to 90 days. Someone was calling me at 8 in the morning and saying, what meeting are you going to tonight? And I hang up. I didn't know how to get from 8 o'clock in the morning to 8 o'clock at night. How do you get through that vast space of time? And those people had 90 days. And I hated everybody who ever took a one-year cake. Because that was the impossible dream. And then I got competitive like I have always been competitive in all my life. And that's left me too, because I'm not competitive like that anymore. I am who I am, and it's damn good. I don't have to be competitive with anybody anymore. But I was. And I'd sit there with 2 years sobriety, and someone had 20 years, and I had 10% of their cake. I loved it. And I did that with everybody who had more sobriety than me. Everybody. You had 6 years, I had 33 1/3% of your sobriety. And I needed to do that. I remember my first year, what this program was to me was the impossible being realized. I took 15 cakes my first birthday. And I was scheduled to take 5 more. But I went insane. And I needed a little validity, and someone said, you don't have to take them. And I went, oh, God. So I took 15 cakes my second year. And I was taking a cake at a meeting, and I knew a lot of people at that meeting, and it was wonderful. Everybody was applauding and laughing, and it was wonderful. And this guy who'd always needled me, as I came down the aisle, he said, hiya, big shot. He said, I want you to look around how few 3-year cakes they are. And I said to him, I said, that's negative. But he registered. And I started looking around. And there weren't very many 3-year cakes. And you can bet your ass I was going to get one of them. Because that's what I'd been like all my life. Every character defect was in place. I came in here wanting it all. I wanted to get it all. And I was going to get it all. And nobody in the world was going to take it away from me. And I did whatever I was asked. I mean, maybe because I was so insane, and maybe because my mind didn't work, and they used to call me the Pied Piper, because they were all crazy behind me. I was sitting in a meeting once, and there was a beautiful man at the podium, and what he said was, in Alcoholics Anonymous, we attract who we are. And I looked down the aisle, and I had brought 8 people with me that night. And I looked down the aisle and I thought,
gotta be kidding.
And I'm sure what happened was they all looked down the aisle at me and said, you gotta be kidding me. I really didn't think I was that sick. I mean, I knew they were. But that had happened at the beginning, and perhaps it happened at the beginning to me, and was because I was so crazy, and I was so destroyed, and I was so insane, and I didn't look well either. I mean, I looked exactly like I was. I mean, I looked that crazy and that insane and that destroyed. So I was easy to come to, and I was easy to be with, and they knew I couldn't be positive, and God knows they knew I didn't have any answers. I did have the answer of Alcoholics Anonymous. What I did then and what I do today is I take them to what worked for me. I take them where it worked for me. And where that worked then and where that works now is in Alcoholics Anonymous, in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and practically no place else. Because I was told, but that was a long time ago, that we didn't deal in advice in here. That we dealt in experience, and what we did was we shared our experience. If you're new tonight, you're probably sitting between two psychiatrists. Don't let them fool you. That's recently happened in Alcoholics Anonymous over the last few years. It has turned usually at most participation meetings away from Alcoholics Anonymous. You sometimes feel that you're in a meeting of the latest chapter from the magazine Psychology Today. I mean, no one is even relating it to a step. What they are doing is staying in the problem, and what they're doing is stirring it up, and where they'll end up is rowing out to sea and sinking. I have found that who does not have the answers about my problems is me. And that if I do think I have them, I had best be very careful. I had all the answers to my problems before I got here. I had all the answers to everybody's problems before I got here. I no longer have those answers for me. I no longer have those answers for anybody else. Those answers, unfortunately, take a long time coming. For me, it's fortunate they've taken a long time coming because it's kept me around here for a long time. Has kept me around here long enough, I'll be, and I won't say by the grace of God, I will be 11 years sober in another 2 months. It's kept me around here just long enough for me to understand that I don't understand anything. And that's a blessed place to be. What I have been taught, and one of the greatest things that has happened to me in here, is that I know I don't have the answers. A lot of weight was taken off my shoulders with my understanding that I don't have to have the answers. That is done for me. They did not tell me that I was going to get rid of my defects of character or that I could analyze them away. They said a little term like God. There's a term in here called God. Not Freud. It's called God. Will remove these defects of character, and that's who I asked for. If I had been able to and allowed to remove my defects of character when I got here, I would have killed myself, because I was the defect of character. And that's exactly how I came in here. I'm not one of the ones who walked into the back of the room looking at all of you and saying, oh my God, my lower companions. I'm one of the ones who walked in here thinking, my God, how pretty they are, and they're all shaved, and you're all well-dressed, and you're all laughing, and you all look put together, and you all had something going for you. And I came in less than everybody. And that's also a wonderful way to start in here. It's a great way to start in here. I didn't come in here thinking that I knew anything. I mean, God knows I didn't have any answers. And I didn't have any questions. I wasn't the one who could put his hand up, but in here you don't have to put your hand up to ask a question. Somebody's always asking a question for you. And there's always somebody to answer it. Every answer I have today is every answer I never had before I got to this program. And every answer has been given me and fulfilled in Alcoholics Anonymous. I have not gotten it anyplace else. I was too compulsive, too tunnel-visioned, too everything else. I had to believe this program worked. This was it. And that's all I have ever done, is try to the best of my ability to practice the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I worked in my first year 4 meetings a week. I was terrified of people, and I learned how to do that. I learned how to get there early enough to set it up before the secretary even got there. But I did it my way. They said you had to put your hand out, and I couldn't do that. And the old Normandy-Wilshire meeting, it was the only meeting in town that the alcoholics had to come at the coffee pots instead of by them. And I just used to stand between the coffee pots. I didn't know I was terrified of rejection. I didn't know all the terms you all were talking about. But I stood between the two coffee pots, and I waited for someone to smile at me. And as soon as they smiled, my hand went out. As soon as they winked, the hand went out. But I couldn't put it out until someone said something to me first. But I found out how to do that. I found out how to get around everything and every rule and still perform as I was asked to perform in here because I wanted to stay sober. I didn't understand why people were being kind. I didn't understand why people were being nice to me. I didn't understand why anybody cared. I thought maybe everybody just didn't know that everything was all gone and I had nothing left. And no matter what the car looked like, the gas tank was always on empty. I mean, I learned to pray early in Alcoholics Anonymous. I came into here without knowing the words to the Lord's Prayer. And I learned to pray early because I had to learn to pray early. Because I was always in a state of panic. And that's what worked for me. I found that prayer changed feelings. It never changed a fact. It never changed anything in my life. It never got me anything. I remember once I was coming back from the beach and I was freezing to death and the top was down and I had no gas and I'd finally finagled a credit card for myself and it was a master charge. And I was driving up Pico Boulevard and I was looking for a gas station that had a master charge sign and I prayed to God I could find one before I was out of gas because I wouldn't know what to have done. I was so terrified all the time. I mean, how do you get someone to come and tell you get the gas and you don't have any money? How are you going to get gas anyway? And I saw a huge master charge sign hanging over Pico Boulevard, and I drove up in front of it, and it was a gun shop having a sale. And I said, "Dear God, you don't mean it." I mean, I used to pray for what am I going to do, and some strange circular would arrive in my P.O. box, and I would go to it. I mean, I was willing. I have always been willing. I mean, when you have no other choice, like when you get to Alcoholics Anonymous, you become willing. And what I have been in here is willing. Not always graceful about it, but I've been willing. It doesn't make any difference. I mean, this just passed New Year's. I had gone to bed New Year's Eve, praying for the knowledge of your will and the power to carry that out. I didn't know where I was going to run away to in the morning. And the phone rang, and it was Ginny G. And saying, I don't know, out of the blue, Ginny G. saying, "I got to see you. Da, da, da. We have breakfast together." And she takes me into a meeting, and I walk past the coffee table, and this pretty little girl said to me, "How was your New Year's Eve?" And I said, "Who gives a shit?" And what I meant was, who cares? I'm sober. Who cares what is or isn't in my life, who is or who isn't in my life, where it's going, where it hasn't gone, where it's going to happen? The miracle is I'm sober. I mean, I went through an operation 5 weeks ago, and I came out of that operation knowing one thing a week later. That the miracle of that operation is nothing that had happened to me physically. The miracle was that I was sober. The miracle was they hadn't made an addict out of me one more time. And that was my miracle. And some more emotional walls had come tumbling down. And it was worth every penny of the operation if nothing had happened to me physically. And that was my miracle all through this Christmas. I hadn't seen a Christmas tree for 3 years before I got here. I hadn't even received a Christmas present for 5. Everybody thought I just went off someplace. I went off someplace before Thanksgiving, finally, because I was off. And you grow. And you grow. And I've grown not because I've analyzed it or not because I know what's happened. I grow because I have learned to be able to let go of it, and all the growing has been done behind my back so that I turn around and there it is, and I'm reacting differently, I'm thinking differently, and I'm feeling differently. It has all happened to me exactly like that. The strange thing is that even after it all works, and even after you know that your life today is only where it's supposed to be, because you have trusted for the first time in your life, you believe for the first time in your life, you know there's a power in your life, you know your destiny is all positive, and can only be positive unless you get in your own way. When you know that everybody and everything they have ever said in Alcoholics Anonymous turns out to be true, and you're out on the plank one more time and you're saying, does it work? And that's the insanity. That's the insanity of being a human being. Just a human being, the doubt. But what I've learned to do is to walk through the doubt. And somehow in the middle of me, the killer, to stay believing and stay going. I mean, I had a disastrous business year last year. Disastrous. I think I actually was under. I think my company was under. The two men who worked for me, one finally said, we think you're insane. He said, no one gets through what we're going through like you're getting through it. No one just keeps going like nothing's happening like you do. Don't you care? I said, I can tell you within 5 pennies of the accounts payables and receivables in this office, and I cannot tell you where the business is coming from. All I know is it is. And at that point, I was also writing a newspaper column, and I would just sit down and write 18 more questions and answers. Which is one of the things I said I would never do again when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. I will never write again. And I was asked to do a newspaper column. They wanted me to know what kind of column I'd do this time. And I was doing the beginner's meeting at Los Feliz. And I came home and dialed a lady back and I said, I'll do a question and answer column. And I got to do a question and answer column. And when I got here, I had no questions and I had no answers left. And now I get to write all the questions and the answers. And I love it. I got a little schizoid for a while, but I mean, I'd write these godforsaken questions, and I'd get halfway into the answer, and I'd say, what did she write that question for? So for a while, I had to have my assistant write the questions, and but they let me do a very racy thing in that paper, and it's been pulled now, it'll go into syndication, so I'm kind of a hate, isn't it? I have turned into a creative man that I never was before. I was the great criticizer. I was the great critic. I was the one that stood behind the scenes and talked about architecture and talked about decoration and talked about landscaping. And suddenly sober, I was put out into the world of having to do it and stand up to be criticized. And that's what I do today for a living. And I get a lot of publicity. And I do very good work. I just finished something that's probably the most sensational thing that I don't know where it came from. It came inside, from inside me. Because that's something else I was told at the beginning when my head wouldn't work and my emotions were so crazy. That where that all came from was already there. That it had nothing to do with my head and my hands. But that God was inside me and that all the talent was there anyway. And I moved ahead then having to believe that because my head couldn't make it happen. And then I had to keep believing that happened because it took me a long time to get well in here. And today what happens to me creatively, it just comes and it is there and it just turns its own corner and grows. So when I stop and look around at what I've done, it's hard for me to believe I have done it. I mean, I've designed some television shows and I did a fleet of planes last year and I've just finished the most sensational house of my career and it's all happening for me. Inside, it's all happening for me. Financially, I still stay afloat and stay believing and knowing that phone call is going to ring if I don't shut it off. And that's all right, too. I mean, I've come a long way. I had to go through all that fear. My sobriety happened for me exactly as they told me. They told me if my primary purpose was to stay sober, my life would happen for me exactly as it was supposed to happen if I would accept that and not get in my own way. And for almost 11 years I have accepted that, and I have not gotten in my own way. And I can always look back and say, thank God. Thank God it happened like it did and not like I wanted it to. And I hope with what I'm going through right now in my personal life, I'll be able to say the same thing, although it's been very hard for me to let go of where I'm at one more time. And that's who I am as an alcoholic, in Alcoholics Anonymous. What I do is what I was told to do. I get out there on a daily basis and do my best, and I do it triple best. I mean, I had to learn to pray to open the mail, pray to make a phone call, pray to answer the phone. I had to pray for everything. I prayed to get out of bed. I prayed for absolutely every feeling to be removed so that I could stay sober. And today I just pray for the knowledge of His will and the power to carry it out, because it's carried me this far, and I'm sure it'll carry me at least to my 11th birthday, and maybe I can hopscotch it to a few other years that I've heard in this room. Thank you.